So I am interviewing Dr. Kristen Moon. I will get that name correct one of these days. She is the head of the American Studies Department here at the University of Mary Washington, and I'm going to ask her a couple questions pertaining to just some general themes about gender and fashion in the 1980s. So just kind of a basic question to start. What does the term 80s fashion mean to you?
So for me, the particularly in the early 1980s, there was a shape, and in terms of shape, I remember when as I got older, wearing enormous shoulder pads, and often having either shoulder pads put into sweaters, put into dress like shirts. Not it wasn't just blazers or jackets. And then you could buy additional shoulder pads to make them even boxier and higher. So that was a shape that I remember quite vividly. And I was pretty young, but I was definitely wearing shoulder pads. But the other is color. And I remember fluorescence in particular coming into their own. The pinks and the greens and the oranges that we were wearing, which we see today, but when we started wearing them in the 80s, it was uncommon.
Yeah. So would you say that the color and the kind of very boxy, kind of almost absurdist
Right.
shapes were very characteristic of the 80s?
I mean, pretty much. People definitely were experimenting with clothing. I think there's also this play in terms of gender going on because I found, particularly the shoulder pads being sort of a masculinist mode. But at the same time, I was listening to like hair bands who are definitely with long hair and looking, trying to be like womanly in terms of hair and the clothing, but yet misogynistic in the music. I mean, it was really sort of a complicated time in terms of what gender norms were, and there was a lot of play going on in terms of them.
So that actually flows very well into a lot of what we're going to be asking
Good.
about. How do you feel that men's fashion changed a lot over the course of the 1980s, or if it didn't?
So I think for people's day-to-day wear, it didn't really change. For both, I have a brother and I have a father. I didn't see what they wore either to school or work change that much. My father wore a suit. The shapes of ties sort of went in and out with the fashion, but otherwise those pretty much stayed the same. With my brother, it was basically pants and t-shirts, and that was the uniform for him. But in popular culture, I think you saw a lot more experimentation and exploration going on with clothing, particularly things like ripped jeans, which comes into their own by the 1980s, some of the gender bending that goes on, borrowing from hip hop culture as well that we see moving out of urban centers and impacting men's fashion. But that said, I grew up in a small town in New England, and people's everyday clothing did not reflect that.
So, as you've mentioned a couple times so far, do you feel that the issue of gender and fashion kind of became a little bit more fluid during that time period?
Absolutely. Although you did have people who were definitely policing people's expression of gender roles and sexuality with their clothing. I remember, for example, Boy George in particular, who used hair and makeup and clothing as a way to sort of complicate these categories, but also being openly gay, right? And that he was one of my first music idols that I had who was openly gay as a kid growing up. And so, we definitely have people who I see as a role model and a hero, and I can hear his soundtrack now in my head about chameleons, right? That we had. But also there is that conservative push often from authority figures in our day-to-day lives that were not in congruence with what our popular culture was. And in fact, it was like two different planets. What I consumed often surreptitiously with my friends, particularly in terms of pop music, rock music, and to a lesser extent rap, but and then my experiences with parents and school is quite different.
So do you feel like it was flowing in any particular direction? Like women were becoming a bit more masculinized, men were becoming a little bit more feminized, or was everything kind of moving towards a more neutral center of whatever goes?
I think people were using their bodies as a form of play and to try to figure out who they were. And it became a central part of pop culture and youth culture in particular. Mm-hmm. That identity formation was tied to sort of things like your clothing and your hair and makeup. And that for and it's generational. Mm-hmm. Again, people in their 30s and older, this was not things that they would necessarily find acceptable, which is ironic because some of these are the hippies mm-hmm. of the 60s and end up policing people's self-expression, particularly related to gender. So you do see women, you know, wearing ties, for example, or I talked about the shoulder pads. So taking not just masculinist, but sometimes androgynous sense of themselves. But at the same time, we have men playing with gender too. But I mean, you have the play with gender, but then the music I was listening to was not very generous to women. I mean, that's what some of the dissonance is that you have people in terms of, you know, their clothing and stuff, but then some of the music that was coming out, the portrayal of women was not great, to say the least. And a lot of it was either violence or portraying women as, you know, stupid, they're just there for sexual pleasure and, you know, easy to discard, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a lot going on, I think, simultaneously.
Do any particular artists or bands kind of jump out to you as being particularly guilty of that?
Yes. I'm trying to remember the ones that I would hear. Def Leppard was very common in my hometown. They were very popular. Kiss. And again, the hair, the clothing, right? Definitely was not within what would be appropriate masculinist heterosexual norms, right? Definitely not. But some of the songs didn't necessarily fit the Me Too movement. Let's just leave it at that. I'm trying to remember who else. Van Halen. Who's the LA sort of? And the guitarist with big hair from LA. Guns N' Roses. So, I mean, that's sort of early 80s to late 70s, early 80s into late 80s, early 90s. But a lot of sort of what I'll call hair bands, although they're different. Glam and all sorts of camps there are part of that.
So do you think that there was any particular catalyst between the 70s and the 80s that kind of brought upon this whole change in how gender and fashion were in conversation with one another?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's multiple forces. Of course, we're on the heels of the Gay Liberation Front. Mm-hmm. We're on the heels of second wave feminism. And what we're seeing is these political movements affecting everyday aspects of people's lives. And so, for example, I remember Mary Tyler Moore, and she's single. She is a career woman. She's having premarital sex. Right. And that was provocative. Right. Just and she's in New York. Right. I mean, there's this new paradigm of what a woman is emerging. And I think some of the clothing that we see for women in particular reflects that move towards a working woman. Mm-hmm. Right. And being a professional. And then for men, I think there is a bit of a gender confusion that is reflected, particularly in these sort of heteronormative at times misogynistic, but bands, right? Trying to figure out, well, what does it mean to be a man, right? if Mary Tyler Moore can do all these things, then what are we? Who are we, right? Mm-hmm. So you see some of that playing out with pop culture, but also the fact that, you know, we can celebrate openly gay men and women in pop culture in ways that, you know, we never did prior to the 1970s and 1980s. So I would say on all those fronts, we see a major change happening in that period. That said, I can tell you that I never talked to my parents about liking Boy George. I never was allowed to listen to Madonna around my parents, right? I mean, they were dangerous to them on numerous fronts. But I did it in other ways with friends and with my little radio. So,
moving to a bit more of a commercial capitalist perspective on it, what demographics do you feel were most heavily targeted by, you know, clothing companies, advertisers, media in general?
Yeah. Well, I think it's twofold. I do think a lot of products are targeted towards children. But at the same time, they're targeted towards parents because they need to make them palatable for parents to pay for them. So, for example, cereals will have cute little cartoons that might appeal to young children who then, you know, will identify that brand while with a parent in the grocery store and say, hey, I want that because it has cute monkeys in the commercial, right? And the parent will maybe do that, right? So you have... You see that play out there. In terms of fashion, was a little bit more complicated because the branding that we know today, I didn't grow up with. A lot of the clothing that I wore, you know, there was no name brand per se, except in athletics. And then you knew like Nike, right? And that was before Nike did anything more than sneakers, but you knew Nike sneakers. Most of your clothes did not have a name brand associated with it. And you didn't see it advertised much in the same way except in magazines. And most of the stuff in magazines, I couldn't afford anyways, right? And neither could my parents because we're talking about like Vogue, right? And you have multi-thousand-dollar dresses, which you wear, I don't know.
Once or twice.
What?
If that.
Twice. Right. Right. I mean, and this is like... red carpet stuff, right? And so it's more, you know, aspirational than what you could actually consume. So on that front, it's, you don't see that. But in terms of things like toys, in terms of food, in terms of TV shows, I definitely see like both, like companies gearing towards both parents and the kids themselves.
So does this differ from the immediately preceding decades with the buying power kind of shifting a little bit younger than in previous generations?
I would say definitely. And again, I was born in the 70s, so I don't know what it was like per se because it was not part of my lived experience. But I definitely think that the way, well, the laws change, right? And so what you can advertise to children changes over this period, and things like He-Man, for example, emerge. Where you have a product and a toy, you know, hand in hand, that they're trying to sell to, to children. You don't see a lot of that, even in the old commercials for the 50s and 60s. This is something that's new. And then parents, it's sort of an easy way to make kids happy, even though it's really a short-term happiness. It's not a meaningful relationship, right? So to speak, that, you know, buying things, you know, can thrill you for the moment, but a functional, fully functional relationship with your parents is probably a better thing in the long run.
So why do you think that this buying power and targeting kind of shifted towards the younger demographics than previously?
Well, definitely it's tied to the fact that young people are earning money and they're buying things for themselves. More parents are working, children have more free time, and while they're by themselves, parents are giving them money to go buy stuff for themselves. My parents were less like that, but I definitely saw that happening around me. A lot of people with a lot of young people with money that I didn't quite understand how they got a hold of. I was a little envious, quite frankly. my parents' attitude was like, if you need something, we will buy it. You you're not allowed to go buy things without our approval, even if it was my own money from working. But I also think that if you target young people, you can make them lifelong consumers, right? I mean, start them young, eating McDonald's, and you got somebody who's going to love McDonald's for, what, 70 years? Mm-hmm. That's great marketing. That's really smart. So I think, again, there's a bunch of things that are going on in terms of society. Women are working outside the home. Children have more free time. They're also working. They have money. People are giving them money. You want to make lifelong consumers.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, with something like MTV kind of exploding during that time period,
yes.
How do you feel that kind of interacted with all of these other aspects of the time?
So MTV was taboo in my parents' home. We got cable when I was in third grade. And I would sneak home, and I had an hour before I was latchkey. I had an hour before my mom would show up, and so that was when I get to watch MTV. And then promptly would turn it off and go, like, hide someplace in the house when she pulled into the driveway. So I loved MTV. And it gave me a view of a world that was not like the one that I was growing up in, that's for sure. It definitely promoted, for me, some alternative values in terms of who I could be as a person. Certain things, I guess there is a consumer element to it. I remember, you know, certain shoes and hairstyles in particular, like the claw, which my hair didn't do very well, but I had other friends who mastered it, really mastered that skill. And that was all coming from our popular culture. That was not coming definitely from our parents. Teasing it, making it like this front-only bouffant. It's just bad. I knew no guys who did like the flock of eagles sort of thing, but I'm sure in other parts maybe of the country where it's maybe more urban, that was happening too. So MTV did not affect my consumerism per se, because except in maybe the most minimal of sense, because my family was so authoritarian and strict. Mm-hmm. I did get some flexibility in terms of, like, colors of things I would own. But, you know, I'm not going to get a conical, like, brassiere thing like Madonna wears. Mm-hmm. But I got to do fluorescence. I got to do shoulder pads. I got to do jelly shoes. That was permissible. Things like that. Earrings. My parents policed my earrings heavily as well. So. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, between the sort of forbidden fruit factor,
mm-hmm.
all of that,
yeah.
and the kind of subversive nature of a lot of youth fashion, do you think this kind of worked together to simultaneously make it both more attractive to younger people and even more unattractive / subversive to the overall cultural norms?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is a period where you have, you know, Tipper Gore wanting to police the music industry and create, like, you know, what becomes the warning labels, right, on music, because they're so panicked about some of the things we're consuming as children. Of course, not that they're actually parenting us, right, meanwhile, right? Note, I'm watching MTV because my parents aren't home, right, and I'm latchkey, and I'm 8 years old. Right? My mom will tell you, no, you were older. I was like, no, because I remember when we got MTV, and that was a wonderful thing. I think questioning authority is part of growing up. It's a way in which you create a sense of self and autonomy from your parents. So I think those sorts of feelings are normal. But at the same time, there is this conservative backlash of the 80s that is trying to sort of tamp down on some of the vibrancy that happened in the 60s and 70s, and they target pop culture and they target fashion. I mean, that said, most of the people I know who went through this period, they turned out fine. They turned out absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's just part of growing up. But yeah, my parents never listened to anything, any music I liked. Mm-hmm. They didn't even want to know.
So that's how it was managed, was silence.
Mm-hmm. So kind of winding down a little bit, was there anything else significant about this time period with regards to fashion, gender, popular culture that you think would be significant?
So one other thing that, one other thing that was a big deal in my family was skirt lengths and the mini skirt.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Catholic school. I wore a Catholic uniform. I can't wear that plaid even to this day. It makes me ill. And I had to wear a skirt that went to my knees. Particularly my mom, would make comments about girls who wore anything above the knee. And that basically that they, you know, hinting that they were sluts. And that was really hard growing up. That she was policing me like that and shaming my friends for the way they looked and that whatever they got, they deserved. As a result, she often made me wear things that literally went to the ground. and it was, it was very hard. I don't think I owned a miniskirt. I don't even think I, until I could buy one myself. Anything above the knee.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of gendered body shaming within the household growing up. And that was tied to the conflict. But that said, miniskirts were pretty normal in the 80s. And all the way, 80s and into the 90s. And people wore them in the 60s, too. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure my mom probably did, too. There was, again, it's tied to sort of the black backlash. And my family came from this background where they didn't talk about these things.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of just inability to talk about sexual assault or sexuality or gender at all. They had no language for it. And so the best case was silence. That was usually the best option because the other option they went to was ridicule.
Mm-hmm.
So, growing up, it was, it was a typical childhood. At the same time, there are these moments where these things would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, looking back, I'm always like, I hope I'm not like that as a parent, although no doubt I am. You want a different sort of relationship, particularly about gender and sexuality with your kids. At least that's my story from mm-hmm. those experiences.
Was your brother or any of your male classmates / friends subjected to very similar gendered body shaming?
No. For men, no. Definitely not. And part of it is, in terms of male fashion, the men that, both, the boys and the men, did not dress in ways that were seen as gender bending in any stripe, right, that we're seeing in pop culture. So they weren't targeted in that sense. So no, but also you don't have like the slut shaming culture geared towards men. It just wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas women, it was clearly there. So we were getting mixed messages, right? This is what beautiful is, but if you do that, you're a slut, you're a whore, So. So who should we be? It was very confusing.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Other questions?
No, I don't really have anything else at this point. So I would like to thank you for
humoring
me and helping me with this. And so that is
good.
It.